I encourage you to support the Education Funding Task Force A-Plus report. Educating Alaska children, our number one resource, should be the state's number one priority. This is the first time funding education has been addressed by a bipartisan committee in which educators, government, and business came together to form a five-year plan to address education's long-term funding needs. Educating our children is a business, and this report documents the need and allocates the resources necessary to fulfill our obligation to all Alaska's children. Schools have long been underfunded, and the funds continue to decrease while needs have increased. The state has implemented standards that will ensure all our children receive an education that will help them succeed. Please allow our schools the necessary funds to accomplish this task. Fully funding pupil transportation directly relates to adequately funding for schools. Any pupil transportation costs not fully funded come directly from the foundation formula dollars, which affects the district's ability to meet the state mandated 70-30 obligation. I urge you to do what is best for all of Alaska's children and fully support the A-plus report and fully fund pupil transportation. Thank you.
Thank you, Tommy. Next, we'll go back to Ketchikan. Penny Dillard.
Hello, my name is Penny Dillard, and I am a parent of three children, age 17, 19, and 23, that are all highly addicted to tobacco and have been since approximately the eighth grade. Tobacco use is the number one cause of preventable death. Tobacco use kills more people than vehicle accidents, suicides, homicides, AIDS, alcohol use, and cocaine combined. That's 430,000 deaths per year in the U.S. alone. It all starts out with innocent youth wondering what tobacco is like. Of those that choose to experiment, 40% become lifelong smokers. Half of those will eventually die of a tobacco-related illness. The tragedy doesn't stop there. In addition to the 1,200 U.S. citizens that die daily, 78,000 non-smokers die each year from tobacco-related illnesses due to secondhand smoke. You are now aware of the problem. You have the ability to provide the solution. Please use the tobacco settlement money in a responsible manner. Fund tobacco cessation and prevention. Thank you.
Thank you, Penny. next, we'll go to David Deal.
My name is David Deal. I have a business at 4988 Shoreline Drive in Ketchikan. My concern is the funding for our 24-hour trooper coverage in the Ketchikan area. I have an alarm business with many customers in the Ketchikan borough area. Their concern is the trooper response time after midnight when their business is the most exposed to burglary. After the alarm is sounded during trooper hours, we can expect approximately a response time to be 12 minutes. They have some chance to apprehend the intruder. After midnight, they have none. I'm also concerned personally with drunk drivers. With no trooper patrol of the highway system after midnight, when they need it the most, we open our highways for more traffic fatality. We need 24-hour protection in Ketchikan area. Thank you for listening to my concerns.
Thank you, David. Next, we'll go to Mayor Weinstein. Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Bob Weinstein. I am mayor of the city of Ketchikan, and I'm also a chair of the Southeast Conference of Mayors. I have two brief comments on issues which are of concern not only to Ketchikan, but I believe to the Southeast Alaska region as a whole. The first one has to do with foundation formula funding for our schools. In my opinion, our schools are not receiving adequate funding to educate all students to high standards. As you may know, I am a member of the Governor's Education Task Force, and I hope to participate in a discussion with you at a future date on legislation introduced by the Governor to implement the task force recommendations, as well as other proposals which have been introduced by your colleagues in an effort to provide more adequate funding while at the same time increasing student performance and school district accountability. The second issue has to do with our basic transportation system in Southeast Alaska, and that's the Alaska Marine Highway System. It's my understanding that the recommended level of funding from the subcommittee is not adequate to maintain our current level of Marine Highway System operations. The people of Southeast Alaska, as well as other communities served by the Marine Highway System, need and deserve decent transportation services. Mombasa basic transportation, which will result from inadequate funding, will also, in my opinion, exacerbate the economic harm which our communities are already facing. So I hope that the Finance Committee will take a serious look at restoring the level of funding for the Marine Highway System to that which will assure that we do not lose any further transportation services here or elsewhere in the state. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee.
Thank you, Your Honor. Next, we'll go back to Rangel. And if I could ask the camera to get down on the end there, the woman there. I think there's a Mr. Wilson that's there. Mr. Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Woody Wilson. I'm superintendent of Rangel Public Schools. I appreciate your time this evening. The Governor's Task Force on Education was a bipartisan group that made educated recommendations regarding funding. Those recommendations were well thought out and have been presented to Alaskans across the state. I believe the recommendations are very reasonable and should be followed. Please include these recommendations in your budget and in your legislation. I would also like to take a minute to address full funding of transportation. To add money to our budget in one area and take it away in another is not what we expect and would not be a benefit to schools. Historically, transportation has been fully funded. When the legislature short funds this program, it directly takes money that would have been spent in classrooms and moves it into transportation. I do want to thank you for your foresight in providing the automatic inflation proving that student transportation programs get. But please don't short fund this important budget. And I do thank you for listening and appreciate your time.
Do you have any comments, Representative Wilson? Thank you, Mr. Wilson. We'll go to Danny Fraser.
He was just going to, sir. He's changed his mind.
Okay, we'll go to Pam Roop.
Hi, my name is Pam Roop, and I'm the business manager for Rangel Public Schools. And I just want to echo what our board and superintendent have already stated. Please look up, take a good look at the task force report. It looks at education over 5 years. It has a good solid plan. Good people came together to look at that and look at the problem of education. We'd also like to just say that over the last 10 years, inflation has increased 30%. School funding has been, I think, 5% from the state. Our city picked up quite a bit of that. 31% of their budget goes to our schools. And people transportation, again, I just want to echo what Woody said, that when you don't fully fund that, that comes directly out of our general fund, directly out of over instruction. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Pam.
Mr. Chairman.
Next, we'll go to Tiff. Representative Croft?
Just real quickly, because Pam emailed me last night while I was reading that that bipartisan report, and I mean the recommendation for the first year was a 4% increase that doesn't sound like a lot in 4%, but that would be a $34 million increase to the foundation formula this year. Pam, I mean, can you really say that that is what's needed to have an adequate education system in your area?
I think what that does is keeps us even. It doesn't increase. It doesn't help us as far as getting, you know, those excellent programs in. The state wants us to be more accountable and have excellent quality. What that will do is keep us even. It doesn't allow for us to grow or add any programs.
Thank you, Pam. Next we'll go to Petersburg. Tiffany Borges.
Good evening. My name is Tiffany Borges with Changing Tides Counseling Services here in Petersburg. Rural communities such as Petersburg are experiencing a heightened demand for substance abuse services. The at-risk youth and chemically dependent population benefits from dynamic, community-based prevention and treatment programs. In order to provide these programs, we depend on your fiscal support. Let's not watch the available resources decline as the needs increase. Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you.
Thank you, Tiffany. Next, we'll go back to Sitka. We have a Jean Frank.
Thank you for hearing my concern. I'd like to speak about the tobacco prevention and control money. smoking causes cancers. Cigarettes are a gateway drug. The younger a person is when he or she begins smoking, the stronger the addiction, i.e. the harder it is to quit, thus increasing health risks. Smoking while the lungs are still developing appears to permanently hamper normal cell repair. People with the worst DNA damage are those who began smoking at the youngest age. Parents who smoke and therefore believe they can't effectively prevent their kids from smoking are still not excused from parental responsibility to care for and protect their kids' health and welfare. They should be held accountable. Healthcare costs rise exponentially with each youth we fail to protect from smoking, because not only does this person harm him or herself, but also the peers and the family members they are in contact with from the secondhand smoke. The tobacco settlement monies need to be used as intended and not cut. We need support to develop creative and effective prevention and cessation programs. It is not okay for kids to smoke. Thank you.
Thank you, Jean. We'll go to Alice Johnstone.
Thank you for hearing my concerns this evening. I have two concerns. One, I was going to speak to the tobacco fund money, and I just can say I really wholeheartedly endorse what Jean has just told you. I want to talk to you about alcoholism, which is the state's number one social problem and a major medical problem in this state. The governor asked $8 million to address that problem, and you propose funding it with less than 10% of that amount. If you don't fund prevention and treatment of alcoholism now, you will fund it later. You will fund it in the hospital emergency room, in suicide attempts, in child abuse, in domestic violence, sexual assault, fatal automobile accidents, fatal fires, and murders. Alcoholism is a disease. Alcoholism is a treatable disease, and treatment works. Recovering people become productive, responsible citizens. What can be done? Restore the successful Alcohol Safety Action Program to provide more substance abuse screening and monitoring of court-ordered treatment. Increase treatment in rural Alaska by placing professionals trained in mental health and substance abuse counseling in 10 more communities, and increasing the number of highly effective spirit recovery camp programs. Increase availability of substance abuse treatment for adults by increasing the number of beds at existing residential facilities, improving outpatient services, and providing safe and sober housing for clients receiving these services. Provide more treatment for minors convicted of alcohol-related crimes and increase prevention activities. And finally, maintain alcohol and drug abuse grants by replacing anticipated loss of federal funding. I thank you.
Thank you, Alice. I understand we have one more in Petersburg. Hey, Dale Stone.
Mr. Stone will be right there. Chairman Williams, can you come back to Petersburg?
Well, he's the last one. Is anyone, I'll go through the list. Is anyone in Haines? Is anyone else in Ketchikan? Is there anyone else in Sitka? Is anyone else in Wrangell?
No, there's not.
We have one Dale Stone in Petersburg.
He'll be right here.
Okay. Well, you could tell him we're waiting.
Good evening.
Please state your name for the record.
My name is Dale Stone.
Okay. Continue on.
Chief of Police for the City of Petersburg, Alaska, and as Chief of Police and a citizen of the state. I'd like to speak out in support for the budget proposed by the Department of Public Safety. I think specifically in the areas of recruitment and retention of qualified personnel, I think it's important that we support these people with difficult tasks they have to do. The budget specifically speaks of areas of additional troopers, village public safety officers, wages for public safety village public safety officers, as well as community training. And I think all these areas are important for a proactive approach to preventing crime and accidents, as well as the standard response to incidents after they've occurred. Consequently, I'd ask that you support this budget as proposed by the Department of Public Safety.
Thank you. Are there any other questions? Any questions for the chief? If not, thank you. anyone on the teleconference that wish to testify? If not, Mr. Chairman, we're 5 minutes early. Thank you all.
All right. From 7 to 9, we have a hearing with Fairbanks. I believe they're just now coming in and signing up. So we'll set at ease for 5 minutes. Let individuals stretch their legs, and we'll be back online again at 7 o'clock with Fairbanks.
Nobody in Fairbanks wants anything, do they? They just like to give. They know it's better to give than receive.
We call the Finance Committee back to order. We'll next go on to take testimony from Fairbanks on the state operating budget and mental health budget. Again, for the benefit of the folks coming in from Fairbanks, we are allowing folks a couple minutes to make a brief but concise and informative comments as possible, and then allow for any questions that might come from the committee. So certainly if your comments have to go a little beyond that, we understand, but we would ask you to try and keep them as brief as possible. So with that, the first person I have signed up to testify tonight is Ruth May Carr, and then Jim Noski. Ruth May, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Good evening.
Good evening. I'd like to speak toward the Mastery Settlement Agreement. I work for a health clinic, and every day we encounter tobacco users, and I think that first we should fund programs that will help prevent tobacco use. We have cessation programs that we need to fund. Every day we have smokers coming in and we see the ravages of tobacco use and the struggles that tobacco users have to try to quit smoking. And we just do not have facilities to refer them to. We do not have the funding to implement those programs. And CDC's recommendation of a minimum of $8.1 million, that should be looked at first to go to tobacco issues. Another thing is the prevention aspect of it. Our young people are every day beginning to become tobacco users. We have 500 Alaskans every year that die from tobacco use, with another 60 from environmental tobacco smoke. We need programs to educate our Alaskans to not ever begin to smoke. And this is at an epidemic level as far as I'm concerned. Our young people are being exposed to this on a daily level. That doesn't even address the health issues, the time off from work, the health care cost of 150-some-odd million every year toward health care for tobacco users. I am totally in favor of us using that money first, and then what's left, we can look at other issues. I know that we have other needs in our state, but if you look at the 18 to 24-year-old bracket, Alaskans are over 38% tobacco users. You know, this is really prevalent, particularly in the bush, and and we have those issues all over our state. I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ruth Mayer. Are there any questions?
Yes,
Representative Hudson.
I'm really curious as to what programs exist that have been tried that are effective in this instance. You know, the reason we increased the tobacco tax to $1 a pack was to try to price the young people out of the tobacco. And it doesn't appear as though that's happened. Now we're talking about using some of the tobacco tax money, and I think that's a reasonable consideration. But we need to know more about what kind of programs and where they're used and how effective they are. If you have any information of that nature, I'm sure those of us in the legislature would like to receive that.
Yes, I appreciate that. There's been a lot of studies, and with California and Massachusetts and Florida and some of the other states, it has to be a comprehensive program. Not only does it have to be prevention and control, it has to be counter-marketing, and we'll get that information to you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, any further questions? Thank you for joining us this evening, Ruth Mayer. Jim Noski and then Marta Mueller.
Good evening. My name is Jim Noski. I'm the Village Public Safety Director for Tanaraw Chiefs in Fairbanks. First, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to speak tonight. And I would like to address the Permanent Public Safety Budget Subcommittee. On behalf of Tanaraw Chiefs Conference Incorporated, I would like to encourage the Department of Public Safety Budget Subcommittee to reconsider its recent decision to not fund the BKSO program as outlined in the Governor's Budget Proposal FY 2002. The Department of Public Safety Budget Subcommittee has stated that they were, and I quote, able to maximize the use of the modest amount of available general funds in the budget by recognizing a federal grant that was not visible in the Governor's FY 2002 budget request. The subcommittee recognized a $15 million grant that will go directly to AFN for the raises and hiring of new BPSOs throughout Alaska. With respect, I would like to point out what the subcommittee failed to realize is the primary reason that the monies were granted to AFN and not to the state of Alaska was to keep from granting the state federal funds that would be used to supplant the state's responsibility to support and fund the state's BPSO program. The subcommittee's decision to lay the burden of support for the BPSO program upon AFN will undoubtedly risk the original intent for these monies. With regards to Section 701, it reads, in addition to amounts appropriated in Public Law 106-291 to the Indian Health Service under the heading Indian Health Services, number one, $15 million shall be provided to the Alaska Federation of Natives, a direct lump sum payment within 30 days of enactment of this act for its Alaska Native Sobriety and Alcohol Control Program, provided that the President of the Alaska Federation of Natives shall make grants to each Alaska Native regional nonprofit corporations, as listed in Sections 103A and 2 of Public Law 104-193. In which there are villages, including established villages and organized cities under state law, that have voted to ban the sale, importation, and possession of alcohol pursuant to local option state law. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Jim. Are there any questions for Jim? Hearing none, the next person I have is Marta Mueller and then Vera Becker. Good evening, Marta.
Just a little bit about myself. I'm a graduate student at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. And thank you, gentlemen, for reaching out a workable operating budget. It's not an easy thing. There's three things that I want to discuss briefly. First of all, the U of A Museum, the U of A funding. I'm mainly interested in economic diversification, more teachers, and more programs. And then three, finally, revenue diversification. I encourage you to work with your Senate finance colleagues to make sure the U of A Museum expansion happens. Let's work to preserve our natural and cultural history. Second of all, I hope the House Finance Committee will work to increase the U of A subcommittee budget from $9.4 million to $16.0 million increase. Support the governor's budget. We need to satisfy our fixed cost increases, our program initiatives, and increase the university's ability to use non-general fund receipts. And specific program initiatives that will benefit the state of Alaska include providing excellent teachers, providing people who are trained in health programs, providing people who are dedicated to the state of Alaska and will work to efficiently manage our natural resources. The next question is, how are we going to pay for this? We have a seemingly diverse revenue base, including tobacco, mining, fuel, alcohol, corporate taxes, and revenue from oil. It's time to ask Alaskans to fund our schools, fund our game management, fund our sport fish management, and fund our services. And I've got two ways that I'd like to see this happen, not very popular. First, cap the permanent fund dividend, and then institute a state income tax, allowing for a property tax credit so individuals can still fund local government as has been asked of them. And I'll tell you why I'm willing to do this. I was born in the state of Alaska. I went through the K through 12 public education here in the state of Alaska and down there in Palmer. Great education. I got my BS in biology at UAF, and I returned to UAF as a graduate student. And I would like to give back to my state to help manage our natural resources. I really don't think that the state needs to spend this money on me, spend the permanent fund monies that I use to go to college and not get something back. I'm willing to give something back to have a great place to live and raise my children. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Marty. It was nice hearing somebody who's willing to contribute instead of just asking for money.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Bundy?
Might I ask Representative Foster what the count is now? The last time...
Four.
100 plus asking for something, and now four willing to make a contribution. We're gaining, Marta.
Thank you very much for joining us tonight, Marta. The next person I have is Vera Becker.
Yes, this is Vera Becker with the American Cat Society, tobacco educator for Fairbanks and the interior of Alaska. I do tobacco prevention and control for adults and youth risk cancer behavior and promote secondhand tobacco education, secondhand smoke tobacco education. Alaska, in the Fairbanks area at least, needs adult and youth cessation classes. We have none in Fairbanks where our people can go and go to cessation class. American Cat Society used to give the Fresh Start classes, but we have no funds to do this with. Fairbanks has a lot of people that want to quit, but the American Cat Society can't help them, and this is really bad. I would like to see legislature pass a tobacco settlement with $1 million, so we can have more prevention and cessation programs. I go to the hospitals and visit lung cancer patients every week that are taking chemotherapy. My heart is very broken, and they all say they wish they knew more about tobacco when they got out of high school, because probably in high school they would never done anything about it. They probably smoked, but they didn't realize how serious it was. And one lady told me she smoked 3 packs a day for 20 years, and she's one of the patients. One nice thing she did do, she went with me to go to the high schools and talk to these kids, and she told them how serious the problem is, that she has lung cancer, and she has a very low chance of ever going in remission, and it was a big worry to her for these school kids. I just wish we had more backing so we can have cessation classes. We can't have them here in with the American Cat Study. We've tried. We got someone that will train facilitators, but we have to have money to do that. I hope you can help us.
Thank you very much, Viva. Are there any questions for Viva this evening? All right, thank you for joining us. The next person we have signed up is David Jacobson, and then Ruth Amadou. Good evening, David.
Good evening. Members of the committee, thanks for this opportunity to address you tonight. I would like to request, however, that I reverse my order with Ruth Lahamadu. I went ahead of her. Would you accept Ruth preceding me?
Oh, certainly. Chivalry, you got to love it.
Good evening. This is Ruth Lahamadu from Fairbanks. I chair the State Independent Living Council. I come before you tonight to reconsider your recent decision not to fund
the State Independent Living Council's request for a $90,000 increment increase to expand services to people with disabilities. Five regional centers in Alaska received grants funded with a combination of state, federal, and private resources. Each center that accepts any state or federal funding is responsible for providing independent living services in a specified region. However, none of the centers are adequately funded to serve every community or every area of a region. There has been no increase in the general fund contribution to independent living since the state first offered the program in 1984. As a result, some rural communities and some areas of the center serve have been unserved and underserved, which results in increased costs to the state for institutionalization and primary care costs. We often talk about accountability. I would like to share something here. The investment of independent living services provides substantial savings to the general fund. For example, 85% of all persons who are placed in long-term institutions are Medicaid-funded at an average cost of more than $90,000 per individual per year. In the fiscal year of 1999, Alaskan Centers of Independent Living were directly responsible for successfully relocating 18 people from nursing homes to the community of their choice. Another 165 individuals received services that helped avoid them being sent into long-term care facilities. The one-year savings in Medicaid alone cost for these 183 individuals is estimated to be at $14 million in savings. This investment of our request for $90,000 into the program would yield a significant annual savings to the general fund. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ruth. Representative Harris? No? Okay. Thought he had a question. Are there any questions for Ruth? Ruth, one comment you made about independent living. Senator Miller did have a bill last year which increased the base rate over a two-year period from, I'm just talking up the top of my head, but I believe it raised it from like $52 to $70, phased it in over a two-year time frame. So we have, in fact, this year we have put in the budget, within the budget subcommittee. It's
fully funded.
It's fully funded for an increase for this year. So I believe we have actually stepped up with general fund increases for independent living because we did realize the value of the service.
Sir, I don't believe I'm aware of that, or I know that for sure.
Okay, Ruth, I'll tell you what. What's your telephone number, Ruth?
479-8514.
479-8514?
That's correct.
All right, we'll give you a call back about that, okay?
Okay, thank you.
You bet. Now, Mr. Jacobson.
Good evening, once again. I, too, am here to talk to you as a member of the State Independent Living Council. First of all, I'm delighted with the effectiveness of the programs that we monitor and write the statewide plan for. Over 1,500 individuals in the state last year received independent living services. Now, before I proceed, I would like to respond to that comment. It may be possible that you are relating the increase in assisted living home reimbursements that were instituted last year. That is a different fund. It is a different service than the services that are provided under the Independent Living Council, which is under the Department of Labor. I applauded that increase last year. However, I believe you are addressing assisted living home services.
David, you're right. I apologize.
Thank you. The $90,000 increment is a fantastic investment to have the types of returns that Ms. Rohama Durrell referred to. I know as a State Independent Living Council member that there are many unserved populations in rural areas and even in some of our central urban locations due to the funding limitations. I'm also aware from reviewing the proposals and the grants that are written that independent living programs make excellent use of volunteers, that many persons with disabilities themselves volunteer to do work for the programs. In reference, when I heard earlier tonight about how can other people help, I'll let you know that thousands upon thousands of hours of volunteer work go into making these programs effective. So we'd love to see a $90,000 increment that could go towards increasing the services of persons with disabilities, with this point at a 70% unemployment rate and need the assistance so that they too can be
become empowered and independent. Thank you for this opportunity tonight.
All right. Thank you very much, David, for joining us. The next person I have signed up to testify is Colleen Chin. Thank you very much for testifying this evening. The next person I have to sign up is Tim Byrne.
Good evening, and I appreciate the time of the committee this evening. I come to you speaking as parent of two high school students, principal of Denali Elementary School here in Fairbanks, and president of the Alaska Association of Elementary School Principals. I want to first say I'm really pleased with the number of legislative initiatives I've seen introduced to provide some increased support for education. However, I would strongly urge the legislature to take seriously the recommendations of the Education Funding Task Force. My concern there is that the state education funding has basically stayed at a status quo while operating costs have increased and schools have undertaken a number of additional initiatives. The task force, in my opinion, is taking a long-term look at education and trying to provide something that's more than a band-aid. General operating funds is an area that we need some real support in education. This is, seen in a lot of ways that it's been eroded over the years with those inflationary costs and just general increases in operations. And it's a way that gives us non-categorical funding so that we can really take a look at what those needs are, provide those basic needs for students. In many cases, we're being faced in our districts with having to increase PTR. It may not sound like much to increase one student or two students in a class. However, the net effect
over a school or over a district is that you wind up with more and more classes of larger and greater sizes. The task force also, I think, addresses an area that has been of great concern to the legislature, which is really seeing schools take on some what have been termed the quality school efforts. I think that the conversation that has taken place in the state, partially by the initiative of the legislature, partially by educators, and partially by other community members, has really broadened the conversation. We are talking about how can we provide things better for students, and so we do need that effort. We do need that support so we can make it more than words to meet those needs of students. In the coming years, we know, as a matter of fact, it's hit many areas of the United States already. It is moving over a broader base in communities, and it is hitting here in Alaska, that we are having a teacher shortage, an administrative shortage, and shortages in particular specialty areas, as was just mentioned by the speaker before me, talking about special education. That is an area of great concern. We have students with great needs in that area. We are struggling to get certified, trained people in that area. We need the support and wherewithal to support having these professionals working with kids for their benefit. The $45 million approximately that the task force is recommending is really a small investment with a long-term payoff. And I would hope that that would be given very, very serious consideration with the focus on kids. Schools, in my opinion, have been doing an excellent job. They've been struggling to meet those needs of kids. We see broad-in needs of kids. Tonight, several of the speakers talked about the broader issues of health, social services, et cetera, that all dovetail with education. We're working on this as a team, but we need the support to do that. I would also urge the legislature to, I've heard several conversations recently about trying to get an early approval of the budget. Certainly, I would strongly support you in that effort, because that really makes a big difference as we do plan for students for next year, which is not that far away. So I thank you for the opportunity to speak tonight and certainly offer the support of the West Association of Elementary School Principals as the resource people from throughout the state. Our membership is willing to support you and help and provide information. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Tim. Are there any questions for Tim?
Just one question, Mr.
Yes, Representative Hudson.
What's happening with your student population? Are you having the decline that appears to be showing up throughout the rest of the state?
If you're talking about decline in enrollment, yes, we are anticipating a slight dip in that. We do expect that will turn around in the very near future. The needs of kids, I will say, though, are as great or greater. And so I would not go strictly with enrollment numbers. They do play a part. But that's why I also strongly in favor of seeing the increase in the basic foundation formula, because I'm seeing kids come to us not prepared for school as we would like to see them. And one of the initiatives of the legislature to rename the Department of Education to Education and Early Development, the efforts to provide opportunities to have students ready for school is very definitely there. I'm seeing it on a day-to-day basis when I look at my kids.
Have you taken advantage of any of the quality school grants that were available with the whole quality schools initiative?
Yes. As a district and working with individual schools, we have one example is the summer school program that we're offering that provides opportunities for students from all the schools to get some work during the summer, particularly kids who are in what we might call the gray areas, that they may not necessarily otherwise qualify for other special programs, but they're still struggling, they're working hard, they need that little boost, and so that is one of the examples. I know in the high schools. They're working on some things there. My wife is a science math teacher at one of the local high schools here, and their school, as with the others, have taken some initiatives through the quality schools to look at how they can help students who are working for the exit exam, how they can prepare students who may be struggling in certain areas, and then those who have already taken the test and need to brush up or build on some of their skills. So those are just two examples of what we're doing.
Thank you. A follow-up. As I understand, as part of the application for the grant, schools had to indicate they were aligning their curriculum with, in this case, your elementary benchmark tests. What kind of information did you provide the Department of Education regarding this alignment?
Okay, I was not one of the writers of the applications going in, but the district has taken, first of all, looking at the standards and aligning our state standards, or the district standards with the state standards. Also, when we talk about special ed, we've been working in terms of looking at the, when we set up an IEP, individualized education plan for a student, that we correlate their goals and objectives to the state standards as well. That's where the focus is. The test is then, as you know, based on those standards and testing for that. The other piece of that that I'd say is that as a district, we're also taking a look at the preliminary data. We just finished last week giving the second time for the benchmark, so we only have one set of data. It doesn't necessarily tell us anything long-term, but it gives us some insights along with the portfolios, the assessments that teachers are doing, our CAT standardized tests, the different type of tests in the benchmark, but taking a number of different indicators to try and look at how we might better serve students, might prepare them in terms of what the state standards are looking at, and as they're complemented and actually enhanced by the district standards.
Well, and I'm tempted to ask if you're confident that your students, or majority at least, will achieve the benchmarks.
Yes, I am. Again, the benchmarks are a new test, and a test always needs to be looked at in terms of its entirety. It's early to say what those results specifically are, especially as we're, as a state, also trying to figure out how accurate the tests are. I'm a teacher, and I give a test, I have to assess that against what I'm teaching and what students are performing on the test. The test is one indicator, and I have to also judge whether that's an accurate one or not. In terms of where the students are going, and again, somewhat early, when I look at our CAT scores, which we have a longer history of, but again, I remind you, it's a different type of test. Okay, standardized test, it is bell curve on the CAT, is California Achievement Test, so it is meant to have some students fail, some students pass, and the bulk of them in the middle, as opposed to benchmarks, which is looking at standards for a specific skill, in which the intent is for everyone to pass. When I look at that data, I do feel that we are making strides, and I'm very pleased with the performance of our students. And I say we have a school that's a pretty diverse community, and I think that is both to our great benefit, because we benefit from the different perspectives that the students and their families bring, and it also gives us a pretty good spectrum of the community. My basic feeling and answer to your question is yes, I'm confident. I am really pleased with what I'm seeing teachers do, how teachers are looking at the data, looking at what they see on a day-to-day basis, and we've tried and have put into place some programs in our school, some efforts that are not scripted, but are there to look at what individual kids need and to help them do better and also be proactive with that, especially at the primary level, and we're seeing that pay off at the intermediate.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much, Tim. We've got a couple of Fairbanks folks off net, and then we have one more in Fairbanks, Jeff Walters. So we'll go first off net to Betty Dupuy.
Yes, hello.
Good evening.
I work for the University of Alaska, as is my husband, and my daughter attends the university. And I just
just wanted to call in tonight to let you know that we, as a family, support the university's entire budget, and I hope that you guys will see your way clear to support it also. The university has focused their attention on recruiting and retaining Alaska students and offering advanced academic programs and training Alaskans to fill the jobs that we see in Alaska's future. And my family supports that budget. And I just wanted to let you know that there's a voice out here.
Thank you very much, Betty. I don't think you're the only voice. Thank you for joining us this evening.
Thank you.
Brian Brubaker?
Hello.
Good evening.
Brian, and I also support the university budget. I live here in Fairbanks. My parents, Dave and Tommy, live in Anchorage, and my dad's a professor, and my stepmom is a retired university employee, and my stepbrother, Kevin, he is an air traffic controller and a graduate of UAA's program in that, and I'm an alumni here. I love to flip burgers at the fair in the summer, and things at the university are really on the upswing. It's thanks in part to you guys supporting the university budget, and I hope you continue to do so. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Brian. Appreciate your testimony tonight. Next, we'll go back to Fairbanks LAO. Jeff Walters, are you there?
Yes. Can you hear me okay?
Loud and clear. Thank you, Jeff.
Thanks. Yes, my name is Jeff Walters. I'm a teacher in Fairbanks. I'm president of the Fairbanks Education Association. And I just wanted to express concern over next year's budget. I know that there's many areas in which the House Finance Committee is recommending cuts and or no increases. And, of course, I'm especially concerned about public education and what the future is for that. As you probably know, Senator Gary Wilkin has introduced a measure in the Senate, Senate Bill 1, and that seeks increased education funding to compensate for losses due to inflation over the past decade. And we do inflation-proof the permanent fund, but we don't inflation-proof education funding. So what does this indicate about our state's priorities? So I do hope that that's something that is taken into consideration. I'd like to talk a little bit about the teacher salaries and also about education here in Fairbanks. According to the State Education Finance Communications, Alaska ranks 49th amongst the states in percentage change in average instructional staff salaries in the decade between 1988-89 and 1998-99. Also, the Education Week last year gave Alaska an F in three categories, the adequacy, the allocation, and the equity of funding for education. Only three states received an F in the adequacy category, which meant that they did not raise spending enough to keep up with inflation in that decade. And also, from 1996 to 1998, the average salaries for Alaska teachers in actual dollars dropped from second in the United States to fifth. However, if you adjust those salaries for cost of living, for the 1998 cost of living, Alaska ranked 20th of the 50 states, and it's still dropping. The average adjusted salary in Alaska in 98 was $38,620 for teachers. At that point, Michigan ranked highest at $51,067. Fairbanks, and where I'm going with this, is that Fairbanks and other school districts are already facing shortages of teachers in certain areas, especially special ed and some of the other specialty areas. The shortage will only worsen and spread if the state doesn't come through with adequate funding for education and a long-term plan, I believe. Not only is the state having problems attracting or training highly qualified teachers, but many experienced teachers are electing to leave the profession, which makes the teaching shortage worse. As I think about the gas pipeline hopefully coming to Fairbanks, I can imagine many of the jobs on the gas pipeline at the outset will have higher salaries than teachers are paid here. And instead, I think we should be making every effort to retain our experienced and knowledgeable educators. Just a couple more points. Adequate funding for school districts is also imperative if we're to keep programs that are important to our students. Our students are very diverse, as you know, with strengths in many areas. If funding is not adequate, I fear that areas like art, music, and PE will be the first to be cut. They were on the chopping block here last spring, and fortunately they didn't get cut, but it was looking pretty close there for a while. Although I do agree that the basics of education are important to master, I feel that we should also provide educational programs that allow all students to excel and to sharpen the skills that they'll bring to our society as adults. Also, the benchmark exams and the high school graduation qualifying exam have taken center stage, and financial support, long-range financial support, is critical if we're to prepare and or remediate, if necessary, our students so that they're successful in these exams. In conclusion, I feel like we're at a critical point in the education funding in the state. I urge you not to just come up with a one-year kind of stopgap solution for our financial difficulties. Instead, I urge you to take a long-range strategic approach, plan for funding increases in education in the future, at the very least to keep up with inflation. Thank you very much for your time and for this opportunity.
Thank you very much, Jeff, for joining us. The next person in Fairbanks I have is Joe Hardenbrook, and then John Ashcroft. Good evening, Joe.
Hello, can you hear me?
You bet, loud and clear.
Good, good. My name is Joe Hardenbrook. I'm a student at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. I wanted to come to you today and give you some good news about things that are happening, going on up at our campus this year. When I first came to you as a student, I was back in 1996, and the university was in a lot different shape than it is right now. Came to you with stories about declining enrollments, empty residence halls, alumni giving was down, enrollment was down, faculty staff morale was down. And the message that we came to the government in Juneau with was, look at what you've done. Years of stagnant funding have started to take their toll on our education system, but now you walk up onto the campus at UAF and you see so many good things. Student morale is up, faculty morale, staff morale up, alumni giving is up. Increased federal funding has been attracted through increased state funding, through programs like F-SCORE and the new Energy Center on the UAF campus. And we've seen increased enrollment with new Alaskan students coming and making their choice for higher education by staying within the states. And this is all good. This is all good, and this is all because of the support that the legislature and the governor has given us over the last couple years. So first I'd like to say thank you for all the work you did last year getting us the 16.9, and I encourage you to keep up the good work and to work with us to make sure that we get the full 16.9 again this year so that we continue all the good work that we've done so far. I mean, look at what you've done. You've really helped to turn around this state's higher education system and hopefully this state's economy, this state's morale, this state's empowerment, all through supporting higher education. So thank you. I also wanted to mention briefly the UA Museum. This is another sign of the support that we've received from the legislature down in Juneau. Over the summer, Elmer Rasmussen made the largest private contribution to higher education in the state's history when he gave $5 million to the UA Museum expansion project. And again, that's a direct reflection of the support that the university's been seeing on a statewide basis from members of the legislature in Juneau, from local government leaders, chambers of commerce across the state. And I think that's it would be a very fitting way to cap off the expansion efforts of the UA Museum by seeing the $8 million and capital projects fully fund the completion of the museum expansion project. So that's what I got. Again, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for your continued support.
Thank you very much, Joe. It's good to hear from you again.
Thank you.
John Ashcroft.
Yeah, this is John Ashcroft. I'm a UAS student and also an Alaska scholar. I came up from Anchorage 2 years ago, so I'm a sophomore now. I haven't seen so much of the negative side of the funding. What I've seen since I got here is a lot of optimism. Starting last year, heard a lot of great things about the university. UAS has all sorts of great programs and a lot of nationally acclaimed student groups. And I've seen a lot of potential. I think it can definitely grow. The Alaska Scholars Program has given me the opportunity not only to stay in state, but to actually go to school for 4 years. And I'd like to thank you for that. I know you all voted for that a couple years ago. Again, I'd like to really say that the university has an incredible amount of potential. I see it every day. My staff, faculty are great. So please support 16.9 funding again this year. Thank you.
Thank you very much, John. Appreciate that. Jerry Lanier.
We didn't hear who you called.
Jerry Lanier.
Oh, well, that's me. That's Fanny.
I think you're the last one I have signed up right now, Jerry.
Yeah, I just walked in the door.
Perfect timing.
Okay. Well, I want to say that from what I've seen of the budget so far, I'm impressed that you're increasing the mental health budget with the Head Start and the alcohol programs for the rural area, and I think that needs to stay. And the only concern I had with it was the children's coordinator. The children's coordinator is being underfunded by $56,000. And I think that's a step in the wrong direction. It's the big push for mental health is with children's issues right now. And the children's coordinator has done a wonderful job pulling together the different factions, and it can be looked at as a lot of preventative measures to have that funding in there and to keep her position going.
Okay. Anything else, Jerry?
Oh, that's about my only concern.
All right. We'll certainly note that. That is the last person I have signed up to testify right now in Fairbanks. Is there anyone else in Fairbanks that wishes to testify? All right. Well, we appreciate hearing from everybody there today. This has been an experiment today to try and make our timetable more fit with the public's timetable so that they would not be online for more than 15 minutes or half hour. And by and large, I think it's worked pretty well. Tomorrow we have from 1:30 to 3:30 Juno, then from 3:30 to 5:30 Matsu and beginning Anchorage, and then from 6:30 on we have Anchorage and whatever else overflow we might have. So I think it's been working pretty well. I appreciate everybody's diligence and perseverance for staying with us this evening. And unless there's something more to come before the committee, we are adjourned until tomorrow. Good night.